Welcome to this new podcast series called RF Industry Icons, where we interview various well-known RF and microwave experts, entrepreneurs, and leaders in our industry. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRude. Today, we are talking with Les Besser, well-known entrepreneur, inventor of Compaq Software, the first fully capable commercial circuit simulation tool, and founder of Besser Associates, the RF microwave training company. Welcome, Les.
Good morning or good afternoon to you. Glad to be with you.
So Les, it was 50 years ago that the first circuit simulators were developed when UC Berkeley developed the general purpose open source analog circuit simulator called SPICE. Tell us what it was like and how designers in those days went about developing circuits with only these basic capabilities.
Well, SPICE was a great program and its source code was available at a nominal price for in-house large computer installation. But it was designed for low frequency applications. Its component library did not include commonly used elements, passive elements like transmission lines. And for active components, it required equivalent circuits that could not be modeled in those days. We didn't have people like Larry Dunleavy and others who do the great job of modeling active devices into the high gigahertz region. So circuit designers had to do on their own basic calculations and approximations, most of the time using SIFT signal flow graphs, Smith chart manipulations, or other closed form approximations. Most of these calculations were done by slide rule until the first scientific calculators were available in the late 60s. So the first prototype was built on a PC board, and then the designer went to the network analyzer and started the painful process of tweaking, shielding, tuning to improve the performance. But remember, in those days, the network analyzer had four push buttons for the four S parameters. So let's assume the designer hooked up his circuit and looked at S11 and did some tuning to improve the input match, and then pushed the S22 button to see what is the effect on the output match, which could have been significant. So going back and forth and one parameter at a time, very, very slow and inefficient. Microwave circuit design was really classified as an art rather than a science. Microwave designers were envied or respected by colleagues because they figured that we're kind of magicians. We could do things with our finger that others could not do. And particularly those of us who work with high power amplifiers. Oh, that was really a rare breed.
So talk more about the limitations of that era that really needed to be overcome to make simulation useful to microwave designers.
Well, probably three parts. First, to convince engineers and their managers to use CAD, it was an issue of trust. Most of the managers were old timers who grew up in the era of the cut and try approach, and they really did not trust this new approach using computers. The belief was that a microwave product had to start on the bench. That was the philosophy. And then eventually, if they got convinced, then they had to find access to a computer and a suitable program. Computers were generally designed for business applications. They did not have the scientific languages or the interfaces. And then a terminal, how to access the computer? Well, virtually everybody at the beginning, particularly small companies, used commercial timesharing through regular telephone lines, through a modem, acoustic modem. It was very difficult to make a connection to start with. And a company had to make an investment in that. And finally, engineers didn't know how to type. So to sit down at a terminal and to type in the coding was extremely embarrassing and difficult. Engineers did not know how to type.
So what led you to develop Compaq, the first commercially available circuit optimization program, and what capabilities did it have that other software did not?
I worked part-time on my graduate degree, and my thesis was a fast novel S-parameter-based simulation technique. And I wrote a program for the school's computer based on that approach. Later, I converted the program to commercial time sharing in my next job so my colleagues could also use it and started to add new shortcut elements, enhanced it, put in optimization. And optimization was a major step that separated Compact from other programs. At that time, only simulations existed, a couple of programs that offered simulation, and optimization allowed to change all the component values simultaneously to reach the optimum performance. So this was something. Also, I made a special effort to make Compact user-friendly, used the simple coding for the circuit elements, wrote articles, application notes for engineers to illustrate the uses of the program, and even gave some seminars early days about the usage. Also encouraged other engineers to write articles about their usage. Now, technical support was very difficult in those days, particularly with companies that had defense orientation. Everything was secret. We did not have the interface what we have today. So to troubleshoot somebody's problem was generally meant that I had to sign on, had access to their user ID and password, sign on to their account and look at their circuit. Quite often, even the frequencies were not allowed to be seen on the outside because of defense applications.
So as Compact grew in popularity, when did you realize that you had to quit your day job and put all of your time and energy into the program and the business?
Well, for nearly 4 years, I was offering the program to outsiders through commercial time sharing while I had a full-time engineering job at a company. It was just very demanding. In addition, also started to teach a one-week short course with filter expert Bob Wenzel at UCLA that spread to other universities too. My wife expected our second child, and it was just way too much to handle. So I decided to quit my job, my full-time job, and went on Compact, went to operate Compact from at home, and also slowed down my IEEE activities.
So what conversations did you have with your family and colleagues in this transition time?
Well, the colleagues and my company's management were very understanding and encouraging. Company head Bill Farron on at the time was also an interpreter. And he encouraged others to follow up ideas. So that was not a problem. Family side was a little bit more difficult. My father-in-law was an oil company executive, and he was just not impressed at all with the idea. He told me that I should not leave a good, steady job with benefits. And then he added, after all, I can't see how anybody can make a living selling computer programs. Now, this was in 1975, 1976. Fortunately, even though I had very high respect for him, I did not follow his advice and went full-time with Compact.
So as the program capabilities grew, what simulation capabilities and optimization capabilities did you add to it? And did you do all that yourself, or who did you consult with?
You know, I started to expand as the revenues grew. I could afford to have some other people working with me. Well, among others, added statistical analysis and optimization to improve yield, added various transmission line elements, microstrip, strip line, coplanar waveguide, and probably most importantly, discontinuity elements. See, at the beginning, everything was working with ideal components. By this time, I could afford to add parasitic effects and discontinuity. So the accuracy of the program simulation improved significantly. And then during the optimization, I mentioned optimization earlier, it's a very important fact. Interestingly, not everybody agreed with me that it's useful. I remember a well-known MIT professor made a statement that any engineer worth something or worth anything should be able to derive a closed form formula to predict the performance. While it's true in certain types of circuits, certainly not applicable for active circuits. There is no way to derive a closed form solution for a feedback amplifier, a broadback feedback amplifier, for example. So among the optimization techniques, added a new one. It's called the stochastic random search. If you visualize optimization, which tries to minimize the error of the performance, the error is the difference between the actual performance and the desired performance. So we're trying to minimize that difference. As long as it's a well-behaved circuit, it's relatively easy to find the optimum solution. But most microwave circuits, however, are very tricky. And to find the optimum solution, quite often had to have some random approach. Random approaches are not very efficient. So the stochastic random search that we added was taking into consideration past random trials, and then eventually zoomed into the neighborhood of the optimum solution. That was really something that separated, that improved the efficiency of the program.
So can you tell us about the story with your partnership with ComSat and how you developed SuperCompact with them?
In 1979, Business Week magazine published an article predicting that office automation will become a multi-billion dollar market within the next decade. Reading that, I panicked. I figured that large companies like IBM, General Electric, Hewlett Packard will step into that market and just squish my little companies. I had a half a dozen employees, about $1.5 million sales annually. So I was really worried. As it turned out later, I didn't really have to worry because when you look at the major companies today in that market, Microsoft, Adobe, Oracle, they all started by entrepreneurs in a little garage operations. Well, out of the blue, Communication Satellite Corporation approached me with a new idea and a proposal. Communication Satellite Corporation, or called ComSat, at that time had a worldwide monopoly in the communication satellite market. And then Congress eliminated their monopoly, and ComSat wanted to diversify. One of their ideas was to enter into office automation. Their idea was to sell turnkey systems to support computer-aided design, manufacturing, and even testing. What they wanted to do is to sell turnkey systems using super mini computers. In those days, digital equipment developed VAX. There was Apollo and Prime Computer, very powerful small mini computers, and load them with office software, word processor, spreadsheet, database manager, effectively what Microsoft sells today in their Office package. But in addition, they also wanted to package in engineering tools, both for testing, design, and manufacturing. Well, it was a great idea. So we started a discussion, and eventually it led to a merger agreement forming a new ComSat subsidiary called ComSat General Integrated System in Palo Alto. Among the goals was also to take Compact and further develop it and put it into this new system. And after enhancing it significantly, tripling its size, adding lots of new features, we renamed it as SuperCompact. Well, having a large company behind me really helped to sell SuperCompact to other large companies, particularly in Japan. Virtually all the major Japanese companies bought SuperCompact. However, we had some resistance with the turnkey system idea. Large companies did not want to have all this competition inside. They didn't want to separate minicomputer group in the company. They wanted to maintain the power for their large computers. At the same time, the small companies also had concerns. They didn't want to install a computer that they didn't know anything about. Would have had to have new staff and a new management philosophy. So we had some resistance about software, the turnkey operation sales, but it really helped SuperCompact.
So you left SuperCompact and the microwave software industry in the early 1980s, kind of at an inflection point in both computing and simulation. What were the technology trends that led the industry into a new generation of simulation and ultimately the capabilities we have today?
Well, as I mentioned, I left in early 1980s. I went through a divorce. Unfortunately, all the long hours that I spent on working and the travel caught up with me. I had to sign a non-compete agreement with CompSat to break my employment contract. It was too bad because at that time, during the Reagan presidency, defense spending was just unlimited. You know, money was available, and it was really a good time to pursue RF microwave circuit and system developments. SuperCompact, interestingly, still had no competition. This, when I look back now, I mean, more than a decade, Compact was dominating the market and no significant competition. Hewlett-Packard brought out their in-house program, microwave design system, but it was only available on a workstation. So it was not significant competition. So after I left, a new company appeared on the market called ESOF. And ESOF brought out a program on a new PC, the IBM PC. And interestingly, this became a significant competitor. One of the problems with our turnkey system approach at CGIS was that that the large companies, the management, wanted to stick with their own large in-house computer. They spent multi-million dollars and they were not about to put a small, a relatively small mini computer into their company. The small companies, on the other hand, were worried about buying a super mini computer, something that they didn't know how to handle. They would have had to hire new people to operate it. It required air-conditioned environment. And ESOF really took advantage of this situation and offered the PCs, and the small companies particularly would rather buy a half a dozen PCs and a couple of versions of the ESOF program called Touchstone to make it available for their engineers. Of course, networking in those days was not available, but individually the engineers could have something on their workbench that they could use. So this was really a new competition that did not exist to SuperCompact before. Touchstone was a very nice little program. It had a nice feature, the tune mode, that captured the interest of engineers. You could tune one element at a time, and then simultaneously on two display, look at the Smith chart and the the gain response also to see how the circuit was working. It became very popular.
So after you retired, what new ventures did you take on after you left the software industry?
In 1985, I formed a continuing education company named it Besser Associates with some of the short course instructors and also recruited others. I didn't want to compete with universities. Our focus was on practical state-of-the-art design techniques of circuits and systems. In addition to some new techniques at that time, like digital signal processing. In addition to having extensive, proven, and recognized design engineering experience, I wanted only instructors with good communication skills. This is quite contrast to some of the universities where how much research money a professor can bring in is the most important part. During the past 35 years, Besser Associates provided continuing education to nearly 100,000 professionals in our field. That included engineers, technicians, managers, even salespeople, marketing staff, various courses at various levels. I feel that's quite an achievement. During the late 1980s, Cardiff Publication also asked me to act as the editorial director of their Microwave System News magazine. This was a very interesting and new experience for me. And among others, I developed a strong respect for meeting deadlines. In industry where I worked before, if a new product was delayed by a week or two, that was no big deal. But in the communication business, this is very, very important. And deadlines have to be met all the time. A highlight of that assignment would have been a personal interview, a live interview with Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the premier of the Soviet Union at the time. Everything was arranged. This was going to be a discussion about the change in philosophy between the Soviet Union and the United States, how we might cooperate, and how industry will work together. The State Department approved it. The Soviet consulate in Washington arranged the trip. And I was ready to go, and all of a sudden, they canceled it. I never found out why. Could have been their problems in Afghanistan, or maybe the Cold War was ending, and he had other important business. I could not go, and I really felt sorry. Since space was already reserved and allocated in our magazine for that interview, I had to do something. So I went to Hungary and interviewed government officials there, how they might cooperate and form joint ventures with the West. But I always will miss the interview that I could not have with Mikhail Gorbachev.
That would have definitely been memorable.
Yes.
As you look to the future, how will the recent capabilities in cloud computing and artificial intelligence affect the evolution of simulation software? What do you see as the next step for the industry?
Well, the progress has been mind-boggling with the continued increase of computing speed and storage capacity. Circuit and system development really became so much more effective and efficient. I remember with our CompSat venture in 1980, our new company's computing room or computer room had a large capacity, what's called large capacity in those days, disk drive. And it had a 640 megabyte capability. It had to have air-conditioned environment, and every 3 months it was shut down for maintenance. Today, we have terabytes of storage in our portable devices. There's just no comparison at all. Also, the coronavirus pandemics taught us how to work remotely in virtual environment, a major breakthrough, in my opinion. It helps designers to operate in different parts of the country, even internationally, to form teams to use the tools available, which are now three-dimensional EM simulation combined with mixed-mode circuit simulation. They can create products that will perform as predicted for the first time. And this is very important, of course, because when everything is integrated, the foundry costs and turnaround times are very costly. So things have to work first time around as predicted. I honestly wish I would be 60 years younger, that I could be a designer today to use all these great tools.
Yeah, it's amazing how they can now take the thermal effects, the mechanical effects, the stress, and the EM simulation, put them all together. It's amazing.
Yeah, I will never forget in the mid-90s, one of the IEEE groups, it wasn't the MTT, the Solid State group had a conference in San Francisco, international conference, and they invited me to participate in a panel discussion that was called, it had a strange name, Analog designers are from Mars, and the digital designers are from Venus. And at the opening, they asked the panel members to talk a little bit about what our interest was. And after I finished my talk about, I was representing the RF analog industry at the time. And the next person, who was a UCLA professor, he was a digital IC person. And he looked at me, stood up, looked at me, said, "You're a dinosaur." I said, "Retire, go away. You're not needed anymore. There's no more RF problem. We can do everything now integrated. We have devices capable of going up into the tens of gigahertz region. You're not needed." So I talked about it a little bit after. I said, "Well, you know, yeah, everything is integrated, but signals are not progressing just in the direction that you want to. They also go in three dimensions. You know, the small packages are great, but there's so much interaction between the input and the output. So no, I try to convince him that RF problems will be there for a long time, but he just didn't believe it.
Interesting. Well, I have one more question. As you look back on your career and the significant impact you've had on the industry, what factors contributed to your success in your view? Obviously, in addition to hard work, timing, insight, willingness to take risks. What other things?
Well, probably not accepting that microwave design had to be as complicated as it was. I mean, to do all those tedious calculations by hand or even with a scientific calculator was just totally unreasonable in my mind. So to me, the computer was really the optimum solution. And then sticking my neck out and then doing all the hard work, which unfortunately, as I mentioned, led to a divorce, was the price that I had to pay. And I was willing to do that. Let me add some closing remarks. I'm extremely concerned about the poor test results of American high school students in math and science. There is an outfit called PISA, P-I-S-A, which is an international group that does test results at various age groups and then compares them. Their latest study showed in 2019 or 2018, that the U.S. 15-year-old high school students ranked 31st among the developed nations in math. I think they did a little bit better in science, but it's really a deplorable result for an advanced nation like the USA. As a result, I think that many students who are otherwise capable, they don't choose engineering. Those who do are not sufficiently prepared and take remedial courses in the first year or two in college. I'm convinced that the problem starts back in middle school. Many of the middle school teachers just don't have the background or the interest and sometimes the time to make math and science more interesting to the students. I remember that after retirement in Silicon Valley, I formed a large IEEE life member group with the purpose of helping middle school teachers to do a better job in teaching math and science. Unfortunately, the IEEE was not really behind the project, although the East Bay group, the San Francisco East Bay group, is still doing a good job helping the teachers. I saw some statistics that the percentage of American undergraduate students entering into college are much lower than what those are in China. And we need qualified and capable engineers to compete with other nations. I mean, let's face it, the future is all science. I just wish that the various engineering societies for mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, and others would join to create a group, an effective group, to lobby the government to help us to remedy some of the situation. The doctors have the AMA, the gun owners have NRA. We need something effective in Washington. Yes, there is a AEA, American Engineering Association, but it doesn't even have an office in Washington. So we need something to help.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern. Well, thank you, Les, for talking with us today, for sharing your personal story of Compact, and for all the contributions you've made and continue to make to the industry. It's very interesting.
Thank you very much for talking with me. It's my pleasure.
And we want to thank everyone for listening today. Please subscribe to our podcast on your podcast app or at podcast.microwavejournal.com. So you'll automatically receive our next conversation with an industry icon.